Value Market is Louisville's grocer. Since 1978, Value Market has been your neighborhood grocery store for all of life's best moments. Value Market gets it. Life is busy. That's why Value Market has curbside and delivery since 2013, freeing up more of your time for the more important things in life. Kids' ball games, family visits, work, tailgating, and cookouts. Value Market gets it. That's why Value Market has four area locations to serve your grocery needs. Mid-City Mall, Outer Loop Plaza, Iroquois Manor, and Mount Washington. At Value Market, you got savings in the bag. ValueMarket.com.
Tired of jumping from job to job? How about a career in a recession-proof industry where you can make a difference and help create a healthier living and working environment? The pest management industry gives you the opportunity to work with more independence. OPC Pest Services will give you a chance to grow with advancement. Come be a part of our team at OPC Pest Services. Apply online at opcpest.com/careers. That's opcpest.com/careers.
Where do you go to find all your favorite wine, beer, and spirits with selections customized to local tastes? For over 25 years, that go-to place has been Cox's Spirit Shop. Cox's, Louisville's go-to liquor store.
Welcome back to Fast Break Friday, presented by Ale 81.
Early, a new holiday.
Crisp, clean, L.A.
Emanating from the ESPN Louisville studios and heard throughout the Commonwealth on the PNV network.
Be grateful you're not playing for the Vermont High School Baseball Championship. That is an incredible story. They were playing in the championship game. It's the bottom of the seventh inning. They play seven in high school. Game is tied. Bases are loaded. It's two out. Kid gets a walk and starts celebrating and jumps up and down. And his teammates run out and they hug him. And he goes to celebrate with his teammates. And he never runs to first base. So as the umpires confer, as the rules say, you have to go to first base. And he didn't go to first base. And he's called out. And so they have to go to extra innings, and they lose in the next inning. I'm sorry.
Fred Merkel up in here, huh?
Oh, my. Well, good reference out of you. Oh, my God. Oh, that kid will – what is today? June what? I don't even know what it is. It was Juneteenth recently.
21st.
So. All right. Well, I'm going to guess maybe next time he falls asleep is July 8th, 9th, somewhere around there. He's going to be completely an insomniac. Seriously, I shouldn't laugh because that poor kid. But the other team got a second chance, took advantage of it, and they won the game. So there you go. Bunch of other stories going on, many of which we didn't even talk about. It's Fast Break Friday. Thank you for the folks joining us in Lexington. And if you're listening online, we appreciate having you with us as well. Podcasts, however you're listening to us, however you're consuming your sports, we're good. Glad you're with us. Local story of interest for the UK fans, Malik Monk going to stay with the Kings. They can't sign yet. The moratorium. There's a moratorium in the NBA. I always like that. Moratorium. Like, I don't know, I just visualize them all walking very quietly in the hallways of the offices, you know. Just, what are you doing? Hey, Bill, shh. It's a moratorium. Stop. No, they can't sign anybody till July 6th, I think it is. I think it's 6th. But his agents have come out and said, he's going to sign with them. Don't let anybody kid you. 4 years, $78 million deal to go back to the Kings. He had the best year of his career last year. He was the sixth man of the year runner-up, averaged over 15 points. So if you remember him from his days at UK, 26 years old, just coming into the prime of his career. He's one of only two players in the past 25 years to have 1,000 points and 300 assists as a reserve. So, yeah, and the Kings made the postseason for the last 2 years. So he has jump-started his career. One thing we haven't talked about at all, though, which is really a shame because it's actually very interesting, and that is the Copa America, which got underway. And, of course, it's probably going to be the last time that Lionel Messi plays for Argentina, so that's not insignificant. Canada really had a better chance than the final score might indicate. They lost 2-0 for you soccer aficionados, but really gave them a pretty decent game. They were lots of complaining, and why we can't seem to get our fields right. They were mad in New York about the the pitch for the cricket there because it was a temporary field. They call it a drop-in field. They dropped in, I guess it's like the equivalent of sodding, and it's very slow. And it's very slow. The ball can't travel to the barrier, so it's very hard to get runs. So there's a lot of low-scoring games there. Well, the Argentina national team slamming the pitch at Mercedes-Benz Stadium for the first match of Copa Americana. The goalkeeper, Emiliano Martinez, called the newly installed grass surface a disaster. Nothing like pulling your punches. So the state of the pitch was a disaster. He plays in the English Premier League. Martinez does. Very bumpy. We must improve in this aspect. Otherwise, Copa America will always appear at a lower level than the European Championship. Well, you know, that's true to some degree. But the fact of the matter is they're underway. And the U.S., of course, this is, I guess... I was reading up on this as a crash course in it last night. Even though I love soccer, I don't follow the International Cup things as much as perhaps I ought. And I guess this is the different than the – there's two different groups playing in this, correct? I think that's right. There is the CONCACAF people. And there's the CONMOBOL. I don't even know what the other acronym is, but the Copa Americana, Copa America, which by the way continues with matches today: Peru and Chile, or Chile tomorrow, Ecuador and Venezuela, Mexico and Jamaica. Sunday the USA gets underway. They take on Bolivia. And obviously, this thing's going to go for a while. So the U.S.'s first two games are Bolivia, and then they take on Panama in a week from yesterday. So, but the event itself is, if I can tell you here, there's two organizations. Ants, help me on this. The Copa America is going to be. I guess the finals are going to be in Miami, I think. There are different venues. They're, as I said, one of them is in Atlanta. They're playing at – they're playing – stop asking me if I want cookies. If I want cookies, I'll go next door because they're just about done with all the construction.
You wouldn't think they would have to drill that much, changing it from an ice cream place to a cookie place.
It's like they're building a stadium over there. They're playing at Mercedes-Benz Stadium in Atlanta, Hard Rock Stadium in Miami, AT&T Stadium in Arlington, Texas, the field at Arrowhead Stadium in Kansas City, Q2 Stadium in Austin, Bank of America Stadium in Charlotte, North Carolina, MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, which is another issue because that means they got to put grass in there, right? Because they only play on grass. State Farm Stadium in Glendale, NRG Stadium in Eustis. Really, these are all for this year? Wow, there's even more of them, according to this. This is what the website says. Levi's Stadium in Santa Clara. They're playing in Orlando. They're playing at Allegiant Stadium in Las Vegas. Children's Mercy Park in Kansas City. Wow, that's a whole damn bunch of stadiums there. This is the 48th edition of this championship, so it's been going on for quite a while. It's organized by South America's football body, CONMEBOL. I don't know what the hell that stands for, CONMEBOL. The tournament will be held in the U.S. from June 20th to July 14th, co-organized by CONCACAF. That one I'm familiar with. I know we've played in those matches before. The U.S. hosting the tournament for the second time. They also did in 2016. Argentina is the defending champion. Championship match at the Hard Rock Stadium in Miami Gardens, Florida. And it's something, you know, listen, if you'd rather get into talking about who's going to be the backup tackle for the Broncos this year, you can. But I'd rather watch actual competitions. We'll worry about football and other things when we get there. So this is actually going on. It's a big deal. It is a. It also is the. It's a prelude to the 2026 FIFA World Cup, which of course is arguably the biggest sporting event in the world. Not arguably, it is. The United States is a joint host for the 2026 World Cup, along with Canada and Mexico. So that should be pretty damned entertaining. So we'll see if this will the group stage. There's a two. There's the top two teams in each group. They put them in groups of four. I was interested by this because there's so few goals in soccer. Obviously, not always easy to break ties. Okay, so this. I thought this was interesting. They have got so many tiebreakers. It's actually a bit laughable. Okay, Points obtained in all group matches. All right, well, that means so that you get 3 points for a win, one for a draw, none for a defeat. All right, so that's obviously just standings. But then goal differential in all your group matches when you play within your group. Then if you know one team has a plus four and the other team has a plus four, but one team has scored more goals, that's a differential. Number of goals scored. Some rewards scoring goals. Right? You'd think at that point you probably have most ties broken. No, no. Points obtained in the matches played between the teams in question, i.e. head-to-head. Okay, so now the fourth criteria is head-to-head. I guess that game could end in a tie. Now, goal difference in the matches played between the teams in question. Okay. Number of goals scored in the matches between the teams in question. So you've got head-to-head and then goal differential in those matches. Then when, this is the part I love. The seventh criteria for breaking the tie is fewest red cards. It would be like in basketball, getting down to a tie and saying, fewer personal fouls or fewer technical fouls. Better yet, fewer technical fouls. Then if that doesn't break the tie, fewest yellow cards. And then obviously the people who put the tournament together came to the terms with the fact, we got nothing else. Then it's drawing of lots. Then it's just we're putting names in a hat and drawing it and keep your mouth.
Can we just get there one time? I want to see a drawing that isn't random at all.
I do too. I want to see them get to the like criteria. No, I want to see a team that gets left out of the next round because the other team had two fewer yellow cards than they did, and they got to go back home to their to their country. Just as a parting shot, if you want to know who is in, you don't play just the teams in your group, which is why they talked about how you do in your own group games. I don't think you do anyway. The U.S. is in Group C. Uruguay, Panama, and Bolivia. God, we should have a chance in that group, shouldn't we? I would think we have a chance to get out of that.
If you don't have a chance in that group, just fold up. Stop playing forever.
Wow, that's harsh. Just after the tournament, just announcing the disbanding of the U.S. men's soccer program. That's it. We're done.
Isn't Bolivia where Mike Tyson said he would fade into?
Did he say that, really?
Well, he meant to say fade into oblivion. Oh,
obviously, no, but did he actually say I'm going to fade into Bolivia? Oh, I never heard that. That's even better. I think I'm going to start using that. He faded into Bolivia. I did not know that. That's a fantastic Mike Tysonism. Oh, that's quality. When I was coaching at St. Francis, I've told this before, which is in Brooklyn, his brother was a student at St. Francis, and he would often come to see him. It's mostly a commuter school, almost exclusively a commuter school. So he would come to see his brother, and he would be standing. There's like one entrance to this school. I know it sounds crazy, but if you'd seen the setup, you'd understand. And so he would be sitting like on the front steps just holding court, Tyson. And he was hilarious. I'm not surprised he could do that stage show because, I mean, it was like a improv stand-up routine. And it was not always inadvertently like fading into Bolivia. genuinely pretty damn funny. Playoffs continue tonight. The Stanley Cup Finals have suddenly gotten interesting. They are going to have game number 6 in Edmonton. Edmonton was down 3-0. They've won the last two games. They're the first team in the history of the National Hockey League to be down 3-0 and then win game 5 on the opponent's home ice. That's never happened before. So getting interesting, perhaps. They win game 6 and they can force a game 7 in Miami. As the cliche goes, anything is liable to happen. So we'll see. That goes on tonight. And yesterday, Tulio, who just got here, cost me some money because I had a parlay. And my guy, who I said would get a hit, got 2 hits. And he said, take Juan Soto for a base and a half. And the Yankees lost by 2 touchdowns.
Yep.
So
I right when I saw like someone was like, oh man, the Orioles are killing the Yankees, I go, oh, Bob's gonna hate me, huh? And then I checked.
Although that wouldn't have mattered. I mean, if they lost, what they lose, I mean, 7, he could have still gotten a double, and yeah. I win my bet. But the bad thing is, as you know, when you're getting blown out like that, they start taking guys out.
Yeah.
So they load management even in baseball. So they took him out in like the 5th inning. I think they were down at that point by double digits. So he got the rest of the day off because they don't care about my stupid little bet. So there's that. Let's see what we got here. Hoosier Park Race 8. I don't know what that is. Let's see what that is. Oh, it's the tip of the day. Hoosier Park Race 8 Heat Check. Your tip of the day. Now, hey, I'm that guy. I'll take tips from anybody. You ever do that? You ever go to the racetrack and you're going to the window to make your bet and then you hear two guys talking in front of you? You're the one guy. So I'm telling you, you know, Snuggle Boy's got to get it done this race.
That happens all the time.
And then I say, well, that guy's really convinced about Snuggle Boy. And then you go up there and Snuggle Boy runs ninth in a 10-horse field. And you can't find the guy because you want your money back. We had the local soccer teams were in action yesterday. We're trying to tie up some loose ends, I think, here. I believe they were. Were they not? Lou City, did they play yesterday? Was it Lou City or the women? Somebody played yesterday. Because I get updates on my phone, and the schedule is as follows. For the men, today is, I can never get the days right, June 20-something. Saturday was June 22nd, so that would make today June 21st, and they obviously didn't play yesterday, I don't think, because they're playing Saturday. Could they play that close? No, they played Wednesday. They beat the Pittsburgh Riverhounds 1-0. Good win for the boys. That's a good one. They're back in action on Saturday. The ladies were in action. Men are having some year, by the way. They are in first place and they're kicking ass and taking names. So that's been an incredible franchise since their inception. They were competitive right from the jump. And what are we looking at here? We're going to look at the women. Yes, on Wednesday they played and they lost 3-2 at Angel City FC. So now they hit a little nice streak there. They had been they had three match undefeated run. They had a draw and two wins. Now they've lost a couple back to back. So there's that. The bats had fallen on hard times too. We're just getting everybody. You know, listen, these are games that are actually being played rather than just speculating. Although we are going to get into that too, by the way. Rob Nyer is going to join us at 12:40. Talk a little baseball, but the bats had been on a losing streak, and I think they broke it. They did. They won 4-1 last night, and that ended their little bad run. They had been on a nice little run there for a while, but they were. Stumbled on some hard times, and now they have come back. Let's go take a fast look, shall we? At here we go. They won 4-1 at Omaha. They had lost, ladies and gentlemen, holy Toledo. Want to guess? Do you know how many games they lost in a row?
Six.
Nine.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, that's sucky. But they're not sucky, though. That's the thing. The thing is they're not sucky. They've had some years of suckiness, but not so much. They've been good this year. But they really had fallen in the doldrums there. But they've come back with a victory at Omaha. And now they play again today in Omaha. Omaha's good, though, by the way, in fairness. Omaha's 49-21. I think they're the best team in the league. But Louisville was way over 500. And with that losing streak, they dropped to one game under 500. So we'll see if they can bounce back. They come back. They play home again Monday, July 1st. They're back in town. So this is a rough little road stretch they're on here. So hopefully they can hold it together. Keep in mind, they do divide the season into two halves, so if they can get hot in the second half. After they finish with this Omaha series, they go to Toledo for six games. These minor league six-game series are wild. I mean, I get it. In many ways, it's very practical. Saves you the travel. But just not used to seeing teams come and play. It's like they, you know, pick out furniture together. So it's a long stretch going on there. Rob Nyer is going to talk some baseball with us at 12:40. We're glad that you're with us today. What else is you didn't get here in time, Tulio? I left my phone home. I had to turn around and go all the way home to get it. So I was a little late getting in. You weren't even here yet.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, no, I woke up early to I'm just going to admit it myself. Okay. I woke up early to like see if, because Nick's not in town. I was like, hey, James, you need me to do Maven show? He's like, no, thanks. So I was like, all right. I'm going to
go back to sleep.
My bed looked really
sure,
nice.
Absolutely.
And then I did that, and I forgot to set an alarm.
There you go.
Woke up to my phone vibrating to
sure.
James Black, and I was like, oh, God. And he was like, hey, are you doing V-Show? And I was like, yes.
Yes, just not today.
Yeah, I'm almost there.
Texter says, if we don't have a chance in that group, just disband the actual United States. The great experiment has obviously failed if we don't have a chance in that group. Talking about the Copa America. We're not even with the most daunting soccer powers, let's put it that way. So we'll see how that plays out. This is interesting to me. See if we have time to do this. I don't know if we want to do this now or wait till later in the show, because Rob's going to join us at 12:50. But I do like the idea of doing it now because, you know, Lexington is on board with us now as well. They ranked, ESPN did, this is going back, actually I think it was just written today, they ranked all the men's basketball transfers. And I'm talking about as thoroughly as you could. This guy and his team wrote a short paragraph on the top 100 transfer portal guys. And then from that point on, just listed the next, I don't even know how many it is. It's too many to count. It's like the small type when you look in the, if you're familiar with, they used to do a thing called newspapers. And they had small type that would show like the results of the games. And so that was Jeff Borzello put this together. The number one, if you're wondering, if you're scoring at home, the number one evaluated transfer player went to St. John's. So Rick Pitino getting it done again. Kadari Richmond from Seton Hall was terrific in helping his team get to the NIT title game. He had 21 points, 13 rebounds, and 5 assists in that game. And he is going to be a 6'6 point guard for St. John's, giving them a tremendous backcourt. That's the number one ranked transfer player. Omar Ballo, who went to Indiana. So I'll tell you that Mike Woodson did himself a pretty good job in the transfer portal. We'll talk about that in a second as well. A two-time first-team All-Pac-12 selection. I saw him out. I had an Arizona game this year. He's a big man. 7 feet, averaged 14 points, 8.5 rebounds. And in 2023, his numbers dropped a little bit last year to 13 points and 10 rebounds, but his rebounding went up. Points went down. So that's a storyline. Other storylines are, yes, Cal doing his thing. He got the number 3 recruited transfer, Jonell Davis from Florida Atlantic, one of the most explosive players. He was the AAC co-player of the year. He went to the Final Four with FAU the year before, and he's going to Arkansas. Kansas got A.J. Storr, the well-traveled shooting guard. He's coming from Wisconsin. He started at St. John's, went to Wisconsin, and now he is going to Kansas. So Bill Self has done himself some favors as well. Norchad Omier, who was at Miami, 6'7", the number 5 ranked player, going to Baylor. He's averaged a double-double in each of his 4 years in college. Great Osabor, who went from Utah State to Washington, following his coach, Danny Sprinkle. He was the Mountain West Player of the Year, 17.5 points, 9 rebounds. That's a big get. A lot of guys following coaches, some following family members. Tucker DeVries went from Drake to West Virginia, where his daddy is going there. So he is going to take his skills not to South Beach, but to, I don't know, what's the slang for West Virginia? To the coal region. That's how you go.
The mountains.
Okay, the Mountaineers. Robbie Avila, who was created such a furor with the unlikely run, deep run for Indiana State. All the nicknames, Milk Chamberlain and all the other ones that went with it, was a first-team All-Valley selection, shot almost 40% from three-point range, and he goes with his coach, Josh Schertz, to St. Louis. We're just doing the top 10 here. Clifford Omoruri of Omoruri, I hope I'm saying his name right, from Rutgers, went to Alabama, one of the very, very strong post defenders in the country, all Big Ten defensive team. And then the guy that Louisville, seemingly all the fans got excited about, wound up at Kansas State, Coleman Hawkins from Illinois, was honorable mention All Big Ten, made his quest for a new home very public on social media, and the fans got into it, and Louisville got their hopes up, and he wound up going to Kansas State. The local folks, there's other really big name players here. Jeremy Roach leaving Duke to go to Baylor. Wuga Poplar from Miami going to Villanova. Some people thought he might go to the NBA. The ones that are coming to the local boys, where are they ranked? Well, let me tell you, the highest one on the list is number 21, Terrence Edwards, committed to Louisville. And that's going to be, he's a smooth operator. That's a really good get, certainly for Pat Kelsey. Kentucky got the number 14 player on the list from BYU, Jackson Robinson. He was the Big 12 sixth man of the year. So they certainly got a very impactful player there. Those are the two highest ranked. Now, again, this is one guy in his evaluation team's list. You can take exception to any of these things, but that's where they have them. So Kentucky's top ranked a transfer coming in is Jackson Robinson at number 14. Louisville's is Terrence Edwards Jr. from James Madison. Elsewhere, some other players, I almost said DJ Wagner. He's leaving, not coming. Let's see who else we've got here on the list. Trying to find guys where they were ranked because people love this kind of stuff. And I do too. I got to be honest because this is a body of players that are not, we're not betting on the come here. We're not talking about potential. This is proven stuff. Like, I'm intrigued to see where Dre Davis wound up. Dre Davis, who left Louisville and went to Seton Hall, and is now 34th on that list, committed to Ole Miss, and he went to the NIT title. 18 points in the championship game against Indiana State. And he had a really, he was good here, but he was great at Seton Hall, and now he's going to take his talents to the SEC. By the way, next year, I think, if I'm not mistaken, is the last year that you can take your COVID exemption. So this you may not see quite as many, you know, 32-year-olds play college basketball the following year. Let's see what else we got here of a local interest. Brandon Garrison, who came from Oklahoma State, is number 41 on the list. A former McDonald's All-American, 6'11", going to Kentucky. And then Kobe Brea, who went to Dayton, is the 43rd player on the list. I'm just going through the ones where they really highlighted in the top 100 players in the country here. And then go through one last thing, then we'll change topics and we'll get Rob Nyer and talk a little baseball with him. Let's see where we wanted to go next. They're listing, obviously, the players who left as well. So you see a bunch of the—and I will say that a bunch of the Kentucky guys leaving are in this group. Not so much with the Louisville guys. The only guy in the group that's listed that left Louisville is Brandon Huntley Hatfield. He is on the list. You know, and that may be just the fact that they were so unsuccessful, the perception of these players, because they were not regarded as poor players coming into college, but certainly their reputation took a little smack in the face with the dreadful couple of years that went on here, and especially last year. So not a lot of guys on this list leaving Louisville. A lot of the Kentucky players, needless to say, are. Another Louisville player coming in, though, Chucky Hepburn, number 63, point guard from Wisconsin. This one felt like a gut punch for the Badgers, especially after A.J. Storr and Connor Asijan left. He averaged 9.2 points, 3.9 assists, but he started 103 games over 3 years under Greg Gard. And as I said, I had a couple of Wisconsin games this year. He's an impactful player. There's no question about that. We're down into the 70s now. Not yet. Lamont Butler, who came from San Diego State, is number 69 on the list. And he is the hero of the 2023 NCAA tournament, the game winner to send San Diego State to the title game against UConn. He was not only an impactful offensive player, but he was the Mountain West Defensive Player of the Year. So he is number 69 on the list, and he is coming to Kentucky. Again, you know these names. This isn't breaking news, but you might not have seen the list of how at least one website perceives where they are in the rankings. Drexel's Amari Williams, committed to Kentucky, is number 76 on the list. This is another one on the list for the Wildcats. We're down in the 80s now. And Andrew Carr, a 6'10 senior from Wake Forest, committed to Kentucky, spent 2 years at Delaware, and then he went to Wake Forest, and now he comes to Kentucky, number 84 on the list. So a big haul there for Mark Pope, no question about that. Brandon Huntley Hatfield was at number 88, leaving Louisville to go to NC State. He's the only Louisville player that was in the top 100 of the ones that left. Corin Johnson comes in at number 93, 6'2 guard from Washington, the sixth man of the year in the Pac-12, averaged 11 points a game, shot better than 37% from three-point range, but He was the sixth man of the year. When he had a chance to start, stepped up to the plate. 18.5 points and 52% shooting from the three. Good Lord, that is music to Louisville fans' ears, a guy who can knock it down from the perimeter. Another guy on the list for Louisville is Cason Pryor, the 6'10 junior from South Florida. He was regarded as a guy who had a breakout year last year at South Florida for Amir Abdul-Rahim. 13 points, 8 rebounds, over 35% from three on more than three attempts per game. And he is 6'10". This is a team that's going to have some guys who can shoot it. And what a difference that is from what we've had here in the past. So that is it for the top 100 in terms of the individual recruits. There's a whole list. I don't know how many other players are on this thing. Probably another 100 that he doesn't do a bio on, but he just lists the ones that are kind of the impactful players who are going somewhere else. This was interesting, though. Jeff did the winners and losers for the transfer window. And the big winners, Kansas and number one, Kansas Jayhawks. Self didn't lose anyone in the portal, yet reloaded in a big way. The Indiana Hoosiers, that's got to be music to their fans' ears. They were winners of the first wave of the portal. Three big-name additions within weeks of an opening. And Cal's back in the news again. Arkansas, number three on the list. They didn't go out and land double-digit transfers, but they did reel in two of the best transfers in the portal. Jonell Davis of Florida Atlantic, Jonas Adu from Tennessee, and they also had three players of Cal's coming over from Kentucky. The Baylor Bears in that list as well. The St. John's Red Storm, Rick Pitino's transfer class, got the number one transfer. We already told you that, Kadari Richmond. Kansas State next. Alabama's Crimson Tide, Nate Oates, keeping the train running there. Tennessee lost some players, some important players. And they added, though, a number of players who will kind of fill those holes, so they should be good again. Mick Cronin clearly reevaluated his priorities. He went young and talented, said, that isn't working. We're going for transfer portals, baby. Four transfers with high major experience, including Louisville's Sky Clark going to UCLA. Ole Miss, Chris Beard, got four top 75 transfers, including Dre Davis, who we told you about moments ago. Dusty May took over in Ann Arbor, and he has brought in six players, including three in the top 65. And the St. Louis Billikens, Josh Hurts getting it done there. Excuse me. Including a couple of players from his old stomping ground, or one anyway, in Robbie Avila. Texas Tech, next on the list. Missouri, who desperately needed help, 8-24, no wins in the SEC. But Dennis Gates got some impactful players. The last two on the list of the highlighted seasons, Xavier Musketeers, very, very good, and Providence, Kim English, doing a really good job there, filling in. Tough following a guy who was very popular and had great success before he went to Georgetown. The guys on the list here say complete rebuilds. The Louisville Cardinals, first team on the list. Pat Kelsey had the biggest portal rebuild of anyone in college basketball. 12 scholarship players entered last season, zero returned. Kelsey went out and got 12 transfers, including Sun Belt Player of the Year Terrence Edwards, Chucky Hepburn, Corin Johnson, and Cason Pryor are all impact players. USC next on that list. The Kentucky Wildcats, according to Borzello, another new coach with zero returning players. The likes of DJ Wagner and Aaron Bradshaw leaving after just one season was tough, but the Wildcats landed seven transfers ranked inside the top 100. Most intriguing will be the amount of size and shooting this team has on the wings and up front. So there you go. So that's what the experts say about the boys coming in for your teams. So even though we're talking about cricket and soccer and stuff that goes on in the summer and baseball, we still always have time to talk about how the teams are shaping up for basketball. It's never out of season. We will talk some baseball, though, with Rob Nyer. That's coming up next. Thanks for being with us on Fast Break Friday, presented by L8, Kentucky's original ginger soft drink.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.
Welcome back to Fast Break Friday, presented by AL81.
strength of tomorrow. LA is from another place.
Crisp, clean, LA.
Emanating from the ESPN Louisville studios and heard throughout the Commonwealth on the PNB Network.
Yes, now my mic's not on. Now it's on. Joining us now, our good friend and baseball writer, and also the commissioner of the West Coast League, the Collegiate Summer Baseball Wooden Bat League, which has been in existence now coming up on 20 years. This might be a 20-year anniversary. I don't know. I know it's very close. Rob Nyer joins us. Rob, is your league 20 years old yet? What's going on there?
Next year will be our 20th season.
Oh, exciting. We got some big things planned, parades, floats, bringing guest speakers.
We have not gotten into the planning stage yet, but yes, there will be celebrations and I'm sure a nice logo on the baseballs, all those fun things.
Oh, I'm looking forward to that. I'll be out. I mean, you know what? I'm going to make it my point. Mark my words. I will come see a game in your 20th anniversary year. I'm telling you. Mark, put that down. Tulio, write that down so that I'm held to it. I will be heading out there. So
Pickles game. Fly into Portland. Fly right back.
Oh, that'd
2-day trip.
That'd be outstanding.
Yeah.
Let me ask you a straightforward question here. Your life is on the line. Someone has a gun to your head. You must pick the winner of this year's World Series. Who are you putting your money on? Remember, I have a gun to your head, so you got to pick something.
Yes, I'm going to pick something, and I'm going to pick the Baltimore Orioles.
Oh! Well, based on what they did to the Yankees yesterday, that looks pretty strong. They beat them by 2 touchdowns, I think. But I have a $20 futures bet on their rivals, the New York Yankees, and you get pretty good return on it. I'll get 200 big ones if the Yankees win it. I still like the Yankees' chances. Because, you know why? I have a very bizarre way of handicapping. No, apologies to you and Bill James and metrics people. Having grown up in New York, they always add an impact player, needless to say, or two in the offseason. And when those guys are cranky and they wind up, why did I do this? I can't stand playing here. Their teams, they don't have good years. They don't. When they have guys that embrace it, they have magical seasons. Reggie Jackson, like him or hate him, he loved playing in New York. Loved it, thrived on it, they won. They added Juan Soto, and this guy looks like it's Christmas every day. And he's not only, you know, it's not just being happy there. You got to be a good player, and he's a really good player. And Judge is having a big year. When they've added guys like Randy Johnson and Ed Whitson, they hated it. Hated every minute of it. And there was a funk over the team for the whole year, and they never were really good with those guys. So I want my Juan Soto theory is what is driving me to pick the New York Yankees. And they have good, have pretty good pitching.
They're really good. And, you know, I can't pick the Yankees because of what happened in 1976. But
let it go. Like Elsa sings, let it go.
I love Elsa. Can't let it go. But I think objectively, leaving aside projections and talent and those fun things, just based on what they have done so far this season, and we're almost halfway through, the Orioles and the Yankees have pretty clearly been the two best teams in all of baseball this season. There's really nobody close after them. You'd look at the Dodgers and the Phillies, but if you look at strength of schedule and run differential, it's the Yankees and the Orioles, actually the Orioles and the Yankees, and then everybody else.
Are the Dodgers disappointing, given how much money they seem willing to spend?
Well, I mean, they're in first place. They're 47-30. They're a lock to make the postseason. So I would never call a team that's done that disappointing. They have suffered some injuries, obviously. They've had to put together sort of a patchwork pitching rotation, especially lately. And that's the one thing that money can't buy is health. You can sign players who have a history of being healthy, pitchers especially, but that doesn't mean they'll stay healthy. You can have Mookie Betts get hit by a pitch and is going to miss a couple months probably. Well, that's not Dodgers' fault.
Mm-hmm.
It just happened.
Right.
So I think they are going to be one of the two or three best teams in the National League at the end of the season. They just won't be a super team that a lot of people thought they would be before all the injuries happened.
Always like to angle a question about the locals here, and if you look at it, the Reds are still under 500, but except for Milwaukee, who is, you know, having a good year, everybody else is, I mean, it is just a cluster to try and get into the wild card. And right now, Pittsburgh's a half a game out of the wild card. The Cubs are a game out of the wild card. The Reds are a game and a half out of the wild card. You expect it to be like that all year? And is that enough to keep those teams from being sellers, do you think?
I do. And the Reds in particular, you know, we have these in our minds, everything's black or white. And when you see a team that's 35 and 39, nearly at the halfway point, you go, oh, they're losing record. They're losers. Well, they have a positive run differential, as I'm sure you have noticed.
Mm-hmm.
And if you just pop a few wins and losses around, let's say they're 38 and 36, instead of, you know, that's only a three-game difference, basically. Then all of a sudden they're in second place and everybody's excited.
You're right. You're exactly right. Well, look at the Mets right now. I mean, they were dreadful. I mean, all we heard about was it's going to be a Florida Marlins-esque fire sale. And then they have Grimace throughout the first pitch, yuck, yuck, and they go on a great winning streak. They finally had the streak broken. But now they're a game out of the wild card. I mean, so I can't imagine they're going to abandon ship being that close to just getting into the postseason.
Right. The only teams in the National League that have no hope are the Marlins and the Rockies. Every other team, based on what happened last season or their run differential this season or just sort of – or their payroll, i.e. the Mets, they have to think we got a shot at a good enough second half to be competitive and play some exciting games in the second half of September. So really you're talking about – what is that? 14 teams. Or I'm sorry, 13 teams that still have legitimate shots.
Talking to Rob Neyer, I'd be remiss if I didn't get a guy with your feel for baseball history, if I didn't get a comment on Willie Mays. Bob Costas, who is, I would say, you're at his level or vice versa in terms of your knowledge and awareness and sense of history, said he's not, you know, comfortable really trying to compare players of different eras, but he says in his mind, with some degree of certainty, he thinks Willie Mays was the best player of this generation. You agree with that? And how comfortable are you comparing players of different eras?
I'm reasonably comfortable doing it. I think that the game changed enough between, say, 1920 and 1970 that it's difficult to compare Willie Mays, his talent, to Babe Ruth's talent. It's much easier to compare them to their peers, their contemporaries, but we can't do that with those two. The thing that, of course, Ruth could do that Mays couldn't was pitch. Not that Mays couldn't have pitched if he tried, but that's not what he did. But I think that post-1940, there's really no question in my mind that Willie Mays was the most talented player that there ever was, given all the different things that he could do. And people don't really talk about this much, but Willie Mays played in a league that was, for most or all of his career, clearly superior to the other league. The National League was way better qualitatively than the American League. They just had better players. He showed up in the World Series sometimes. He showed up in the All-Star game constantly. Shows up in Hall of Fame selections. It wasn't even really that close. And if you all those comparisons of Mickey Mantle and Willie Mays, they're a lot of fun until you say, wait a second, what about the leagues? And it's like, oh, Willie was clearly a better player. Now, that was partly because he was healthier than Mickey Mantle. I'm not saying that in 1952 Mays was more talented than Mantle. I don't know if that was the case, but for most of their careers, Mays was the better, more talented, more productive player.
It's it was an interesting and albeit bittersweet timing, was it not, that they had the game scheduled for the field in Alabama, and basically right on the day or the day after Willie. They were going to honor him anyway, but Willie Mays passed. I should know this, and I don't. Is this going to be an annual thing, or is this a one-time thing? Because I really enjoyed watching that game on TV. I would love to be able to try and secure some tickets sometime down the road for that. My guess is, what's it called? Rickwood Field? Is that the name of the field? Is that what it's called?
Yep.
Have you been? Have you? I was going to ask you, you've been there, have you?
I visited about 8 years ago and got to go on the field and play catch, and it was a magical experience.
They've renovated it since then, haven't they? I mean, to get it to kind of major league playing standards anyway, I think, or not? Or was it always?
Well, it's undergone renovations over the years. They had to do a special renovation for the game last night just to make sure they had places to put all the different cameras and that the field was major league quality, all those things. I think I saw that they MLB spent $5 million specifically to do this. But, you know, they spend similar amounts of money to play those games in Iowa. They had a game at, I think it was Fort Bragg, North Carolina, a few years ago. So this is just a part of the program. My guess is that Rickwood will go in the rotation, and we will see games there again. Maybe not every year. Probably not every year. I'd love to see a game in Hamtramck, Michigan, a suburb of Detroit. Well, it's not really a suburb, but it's right there, basically in Detroit. There's an old ballpark, Negro League Stadium, there used by the Detroit Stars. It's been completely renovated in the last few years, and you can play games there now. And again, it would take a lot of work, but they can play games there. This is one of my favorite things about baseball in the last 10 years. Is this? Who would have guessed 20 years ago we'd have major league games in Birmingham and in an old stadium and in the Field of Dreams in Iowa and all these other places? I mean, it's really Williamsport, Pennsylvania is another one where they play major league games now. I mean, it's really an amazing thing that they've done.
You know, I just got back from there. Do you know that? We went up to the Belmont. Belmont Stakes were run at Saratoga this year because they're renovating the racetrack in Queens at Belmont Park. For 2 years, they're going to run it at Saratoga. And I'd never been to Saratoga, so we made a trip up there. By the way, how about this trip? I would think this would be kind of a trip in your wheelhouse. You're an eclectic kind of dude. We went to New York, my wife and I, and we went to see the T20 World Cup cricket, which was going on Long Island. And by the way, I've become a big cricket fan, as crazy as that may sound to our listeners. It's what you learn how to actually play the game. It's a very interesting game to watch. Not the test match stuff, not the five-day stuff. I'll never get. But the T20, which is one-day stuff, is very entertaining. So we went to see that, and then we went and took the train up to Albany, stayed in Albany, and drove to Saratoga and went to the races in Saratoga, which was – I've never been. It's a beautiful place. And then, though, we had a late flight on Monday out of Albany, and we were like, what do you want to do today? And I realized it was only about an hour and 20 minutes, if that, to Cooperstown. And we drove to Cooperstown and went to see the Hall of Fame, which is like, I don't know, my third or fourth trip. But I got to tip my hat to them. The changes that they've made to it, I think, are pretty good. It's a very compelling place. Even my wife knows baseball enough, so she's interested, but she loved it. It was, they have a, and baseball, what made me bring that up is because you said, you know, that's what you love about baseball is they can be playing in old Negro League stadiums and everything. That's the one thing baseball has that the other sports do not have is, I mean, there are actually books from the 1800s, you know, stuff from the teams that were playing in the 1800s in there. Legitimate stuff, not recreations. That's pretty interesting to see. So when's the last time you were in Cooperstown? Have you been there recently?
No, I have not. It's been at least 10 years.
Oh, wow.
My travels have not taken me near there, but I've only been, I think I've been three times, and every time it's been different. And different times, I've been in the dead of winter, which is actually the best time to go because there's nobody else there.
True.
You have the whole place to yourself. I've also been in the middle of the summer, and that's great too, seeing all the people and the kids having fun. And I mean, it really is, that's another magical place, and everybody knows about Cooperstown and the Hall of Fame. And I think you're supposed to go there, and it's one of those places where it's not a tourist trap. You go there and it's like, oh, there's a reason why people love this place. It really is incredible.
Yeah, the field I see where they play that major league game, which really, I'm sure the playing surface is, you know, up to speed. But other than that, it's like a glorified high school field. I mean, it really is. It's
right.
Just bleacher seats. It's really a throwback. It's very, very cool. I'm curious. Most people who know even a little bit about baseball know that that's become folklore, that Abner Doubleday invented the game, and that's why it's in Cooperstown. But the real birth of baseball is where? New Jersey? Jersey? Is that where it is? Where is the where most people believe? Where was the site?
Yeah, I think that the Doc Adams is a central figure. Who's the Alexander Cartwright?
Yep.
He's been given too much credit.
Oh, really?
Yeah. Doc Adams is actually the more important figure who drew up the rules that actually wrote down the rules. And I've seen that document. It's a pretty amazing thing. Wrote the rules. Cartwright was there, but he really wasn't as instrumental. But those guys were all, they were in the New York, New Jersey area, and I believe that the first games that were played under those rules were in New Jersey.
Wait a minute. With this thing that you alluded to, the Doc Adams rules, you said you've seen them. Where are they? Where are they archived?
I do not know where they are right now. Someone purchased them for a significant amount of money about 3 years ago.
Really?
4 years ago.
Wow.
And I got to see them because for some reason they were displayed in the Oregon Historical Society's museum here in Portland for a few months. I don't recall why they chose here to bring them, but they did. And now they're on display somewhere. I just don't remember where.
That's an amazing. I consider myself not an historian of your caliber or Costas or anything like that, but I had never heard this guy's name mentioned, other than it's also the name of a very good Australian show, Doc Adams. But that's not the context in which I knew it. But I am reading this here, and that's rather remarkable. The guy was went to Harvard Medical School, but he was played and was an executive for the New York Knickerbockers baseball team. And how about that he was the one that said the bases should be 90 feet apart, and they haven't changed that. That's who comes up with rules 100 and almost 200 years ago, and they still exist. That's pretty good foresight on his part. That's impressive.
I think I got the timing wrong. I think it was about 7 or 8 years ago that they were actually on display. But you can go to DocAdamsBaseball.org, and you can see the whole story of the documents, and you can see an image of them, and that's what we had here in Portland for a little bit. This doesn't say where they are now. Actually, it probably says someplace, but it's a cool story, and most people don't know it.
Yeah, I'm looking at it right now. There's a photo, there's images, if you go to the internet, of course, of the handwritten rules, and there they are. The first
laws rule. Of baseball.
Yeah, laws of baseball. The ball must weigh not less than 5 ounces. Boy, you are at the very base putting your rules together when you got to weigh the baseball. So,
that is the closest thing that we have to a foundational document for baseball as we know it. The real history goes back to the 18th century and the beginning of the sort of game that became baseball, but this is the closest thing that we have to a document that's like, this is the game that we recognize, that we still play.
You're a Kansas guy. Have you ever seen the Dr. Naismith basketball rules?
I have not been. I know it's there in the museum. They have to leave it at Allen Fieldhouse, but I have not. I remember it was a huge story when someone purchased it and basically gave it to
Kansas. Yeah, that's an amazing little. That's quite a little museum they have basically in the front there. It's rather remarkable. 13 rules.
Yeah, that postdates my tenure as a Kansan. So I have not been back to Allen Fieldhouse since they built that museum.
Well, you need to go back. You got a lot.
I know, you got a lot
of things to do. You got to go to the Allen Fieldhouse.
I do.
You got to go to.
I have to visit Vermont. That's the big one, Bob.
You got to what?
Visit Vermont.
You haven't been to Vermont?
It's the only state I've not been to.
You're kidding.
That's top of my list. Yep.
Oh, my God. That's an easy. The only state I haven't been to is Alaska. That's a little harder to get to. Vermont's not very hard, but let me just say, it's connected.
Well,
just scoot up that
Alaska
northeast.
Alaska is very easy for me to get to.
Well, that's a good point. Good point. Point well taken. Yeah.
Quick flight to Anchorage.
And obviously you've been there. Have you ever seen the baseball league up there?
Yes, my one visit, my first night, went to an Alaska Pilots game in Anchorage. It was amazing.
No, that's envy. Envy's not a good. You're not supposed to have that emotion. We were taught that in church. But I do envy you. Hey, buddy, have a great weekend.
Most of it.
It's good to catch up with you. Thanks for the insight, and we'll talk to you soon. Be well.
Sounds good. Take care.
All right, Rob Neuer. We like talking to him. He's a good boy. And we like all you guys being with us as well here on the Fast Break Friday. For the folks in Lexington, we'll say goodbye to you. The rest of you here in Louisville, stay with us. We got a lot more to come. And we appreciate hearing from you, 267-9680. If you want to text us, we got a lot of things coming your way for the rest of the program here in Louisville. The rest of you we'll see next week on Fast Break Friday, presented by Ale8.
Taking care of your family isn't always easy, so we make sure getting care when you need it is. With Baptist Health Urgent and Virtual Care, we bring you more options and greater convenience, too. With video visits available 24/7 and online check-in through MyChart for in-person visits. To check in online or to set up a video visit, go to baptisthealth.com/careanywhere.
When it's time to replace your heating and air system, we know people want options. That's why you'll always get a free second opinion with BJ Heating and Cooling. Plus, for a limited time, get 0% financing for 60 months on a new Bryant system.
Call the experts you can trust at BJ Heating and Cooling.